Call me out.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Underrated. We are the Undercast Company, as per usual. And of course, my lovely co-hosts, Ariel Ortiz and Derek McDuff.
Hey, how's it going?
And today we're going to be talking about a film that I picked. And it is pretty recent. I know we're kind of breaking the rules a little bit, but I was really excited to talk about it. I felt like, especially now we live in an age where like, I don't like the term, but elevated horror. I know people like that term because it's fancy or whatever, but I feel like we're in a great age of like horror in general, where we're getting a lot of bangers. And this one, I'm very shocked that didn't get talked about. It came out in 2020. It's called Possessor, and it's written by Brandon Cronenberg. And yes, it's the son of David Cronenberg.
I didn't catch the name until afterwards, but afterwards I was like, makes sense now. Makes sense now. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I saw the poster and I was like, oh, this is some Cronenberg looking shit, and then I see directed by Brandon Cronenberg. I was like, I guess that makes sense.
You're not wrong.
I guess he's got his influences.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, starring Andrea Riseborough, Christopher Abbott, and Sean Bean. And spoilers, Sean Bean dies in this one too.
Does he? He doesn't.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
He survives.
Yeah, he
survives.
No, oh, no, no, you're right. You're right.
Stable condition.
My bad.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it more because
I'm so used to seeing him die. I didn't get a chance this week to rewatch it because I just was working overtime, and every night I'd get home and just knock out. And right now I didn't even have a chance. So I was like, I'm pretty sure he did, because I remember there was a lot of blood. I mean, there's a lot of blood throughout the movie. So I was like, yeah, he died. I think that's it. Thank you for correcting me. I appreciate it. And so pretty much the plot of this film is an assassin. There's like a special machine where her hits, they implant a little device on the back of their head. And essentially the machine transports her mind and possesses the person that is closest to their hit so they can kill them. And then she'll commit suicide and her like consciousness goes back to her body. It's kind of the basic plot of the film. And yeah, so I was really excited. I like David Cronenberg. I haven't seen all this stuff, but I was really excited to see Brandon Cronenberg's stuff. And I was like, you know what? They're both killing it. Keep it in the family. That's awesome. But yeah, I want to hear what you guys thought.
It's a very weird movie. Very, very weird. As a Cronenberg movie is, I guess. I don't really have that much personal experience with Cronenberg's work. The Cronenbergs, I guess you could say now. But I do know their notoriety and their theme of like how creepy they are. I mean, I know The Fly in general, like, and yeah, it is very much like that kind of movie. At one point I was like, this is very another movie I haven't watched, but I know the imagery because it's like so ingrained in pop culture. Like, I was like, this is very much like an Eraserhead movie thing, like kind of David Fincher-ish a bit, but I guess that is just like Cronenberg in general. And it's a very complicated movie, very graphic, in all sense of the word. I mean, I was like, how many sex scenes you gotta have, kind of thing. Like, there was a lot of sex scenes in this movie.
About half as much as one episode of Game of Thrones.
Not even, yeah. like not even that many. Like, Game of Thrones, like, I think, like had this many within maybe, like, a season.
Oh, no, Game of Thrones, it was like little fingers, like, I need to tell something born to the audience, we gotta have a sex scene.
But yeah, it's just like, it was an insane movie. I really feel bad for like the one that she possesses. I recognized the actor and I was like, where is he from? I'm like, oh, I looked of course at IMDb. I'm like, oh, he's Yossarian from Catch-22 miniseries on Hulu, which I love Catch-22 in general, and I really love that miniseries. Derek, if you've never seen it and you are going to do a second like special season of your podcast. I would like to cover that one because I just love Catch 22 and I love his character as Yossarian and his acting in that. And yeah, like you get that too here. I think it's just a very weird movie. It's not my type of like film house movie, but and I am very confused about how it ended. Did they really? I guess like if they're that connected of a company or organization, I would think that they finished the job some way somehow. Because she wasn't really like prying on her of like, oh, you messed up or anything like that at the end of messing up the job because she didn't kill the CEO guy. But I'm sure they figured out some way to kill him off in the end. So maybe Sean Bean did die in the end. But yeah, I do. It's a very it is a mind bender of a movie. I think I liked the contrast between the beginning and the end for the main character. You get that clear sense of like okay, she was like kind of like torn, both her mind completely torn in multiple different ways, and then like her whether she wanted to commit to like this life or not, torn in different ways as well. And I think that with the conclusion, you get that kind of like, okay, she's like all in every sense of the word, essentially. Like, you know, she essentially kills off inadvertently, like kills off her connections to like the world that she
I don't know if I'd say inadvertently. I think it was kind of intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, yeah, that's the thing that I kind of question of like, that whole end scene well, like kind of like the penultimate scene where she and Colin are kind of like talking to each other inside their mind, I guess you can say, or his mind at this point. And I think that's like a key scene that I might need some explanation on how that works out. And like, yeah, I guess like she just essentially broke in a way. And yeah, like she did kill her family, but also like it's very that's why I'm having hard times like coming up with like thoughts, because it is a very complex movie. And, and yeah, so like, but I did enjoy, and I got the point at least of the endings, kind of beginning to end of the differences of like her essentially like not being fully into this life and like essentially about to like take over. Like, is it taking over full? Like, she want like I guess just essentially be the owner of that corporation or whatever her boss is like protege and say she says like, you know, I'll make you my like partner, my successor. Essentially, because like she can't put that much strain on her mind, I guess. And yeah, so like at the end she's like all in because of that whole moment of like she doesn't feel guilt anymore of killing. And I think that's like kind of like it's kind of like implied that was subconsciously, that's why she didn't like kill herself in the other people's bodies. Like that's what kept her from killing herself in the other people's bodies, because like she was like not fully in. But at the end with the whole like her not saying that she feels guilty about killing that butterfly and mounting it, kind of implies like, yeah, she's like kind of like stone cold
hard. She's just a fucking now. Sociopath at the
I
end.
I think it's kind of being over complicated. And since I thought of it very simple as like, because she's having to play these parts and be other people and she has to still be herself. But the thing is, she keeps taking people over and having to assimilate to who they are. And then I think when she couldn't kill herself at times, I think it was more of like her mental frame. Her mental frame was just kind of like deteriorating. So the possessee, right, would mm-hmm. be kind of breaking through and kind of fighting that instinctual thing. And then at the end, I thought that was more of her finally like she cracked at her son's death. She essentially killed her son. Like,
yeah.
So after seeing that and her family's gone, essentially, I feel like it was kind of like a one bad day kind of Joker snap where she's like, all right, it's over. Like, this is my life now. This is what I'm going to to be doing. She doesn't feel the her looking at the butterfly and saying, do you feel guilty about it? And she's like, no. And then her boss being like, oh, very good. That was pretty much the moment where her boss is like, cool, I got her, sweet. I'm going to use this bitch for the rest of her life. Essentially, I'm just going to use her as my prime assassin. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I thought of it more as is like too many personalities she's trying to assimilate with and try to learn. And then I feel like it's just the minds kind of breaking into each other.
Yeah. So do you think that she is completely herself at the end? Or do you think that kind of like a Pacific Rim kind of situation where there's like a little bit of mind melds and stuff like that? I know that this movie kind of reminded me a little bit, especially with the machine itself and the mechanics, kind of reminded me of like, I'm sure Alan, you've watched this movie, but The Cell with, unfortunately, Jennifer
Lopez. Yeah. Uh-huh. I haven't seen it in a while, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of similar kind of things of, and then also it, of course, that theme, I can't think of a movie off the top of my head, but I know that these movies kind of exist and that theme of, you know, possessing somebody's body and stuff like that. Like, not really body snatchers, that mechanic doesn't work happen, but
I mean, yeah, it kind of reminded me one of that, those being John Malkovich. It's kind of reminded me a little
that's
bit.
That's one of them too. Yeah. Yeah. But that whole like warning of like, don't like, you know, accumulate, like, you know the difference between yourself and the other person kind of thing. And I can't think of any movie, but I know there's movies, I've watched them, that this kind of mechanic comes into play. But yeah, like, do you think at the end, like, she is completely herself and that she won't get corrupted as much as she... Because, yeah, I think definitely, like, when she went into Colin's, like, you know, mind, and she was too weak to hold on to that kind of barrier and boundary between the two of them, that's why they that's why she like cracked inside of him and like kept losing control. But do you think now that she like, I guess, doesn't have any kind of connection outside of this world that she is living in forever, it seems, do you think now she kind of like is in more control of that, of like being able to jump into people's minds and just assimilate?
Yeah, she's definitely cracked. I honestly, like, right at the end, I was like, yeah, she just went through so much trauma that I feel that it was easy for her to be like, yeah, I'm just going to do this now, because she's done. Like, her family's dead. She's been going through so much trauma and stress, having to go through all these different bodies and all these experiences. I think she finally just cracked. And
cracked means, like, that she's, like, can't do the work, but you're saying,
I mean,
like,
I'm saying cracked in the sense of like she's like a shell of her previous self. Like, she's like, she's kind of running on autopilot, maybe. Like, she's like, all right, all this, you know, people dissociate, so my assumption is that now she's just like this shell of who she used to be, and now because she didn't feel guilty for the butterfly, and that instant for me, that was her just being like, yeah, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, just... I mean, the way that I kind of had the similar thoughts as you, Alan, where it's like, yeah, she is kind of trying to hold on to this objective morality in humanity that is within herself, and then her boss, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, is at the beginning says, you can't have this double life, and you even see when she goes back to her family, she's rehearsing being herself in the same way that she is rehearsing being someone else when she's about to jump into somebody's body. And there's all those parallels. And so when you see her, like, even when she's just being regular her, and she's like, okay, I've got to be me, she's got to practice it. So she has lost so much humanity by being this person. And how much was lost before the start of the movie, and how much she just didn't have that humanity at the beginning, is, we don't really know. But you do see her trying to hold on to something at the beginning of the film, and then by the end of the film, she's ready to shoot her young child in the face and hack up her husband with a meat cleaver, and she's just completely, just like, you know what you were saying, Alan, kind of cracked and just lost any sense of right and wrong, and just is kind of like, yeah, I don't care. I don't care that I'm pulling off the wings off butterflies. I don't care that I'm murdering my family and children and stuff like that. It's like she's just gone full Madea.
Okay. Yeah, it's just like I think I knew that I was gonna have a little bit more clarity, like talking about it with you guys, because it is definitely a movie that's just like, what did I just watch, kind of thing. Like a Cronenberg movie is. I'm sure that there's a lot of metaphors that and things and little things that it just. I don't know if it's because I'm tired, but it kind of went over my head.
I got overload, like, as well. Like, there's just a lot going on, you know, and there's just this is the movie I really, really like a lot, is like when it's sensory overload and you just see all these like colors and effects and just everything's fucking wacky and crazy. Like the sex scene of her where she's Colin and he's like sleeping with his girlfriend, and then you see her kind of going in, and then
gay?
She has a fucking huge dick and shit, and you're just like, whoa, like that's a lot to take in sometimes. You're like, oh, okay, cool, there it is. You see that, and then, you know, the scene where Colin takes off, like, crushes her face, and then puts it on as a mask. Like, I love scenes like that that are just, but it's a lot of, it's sensory overload, so sometimes you're just seeing so much of that. And you're following the story where you're just like, holy shit, like, a lot's going on. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, he never really gained back any kind of, like, understanding. Because, like, is it kind of, like, implied that he was planning already to kill her? Because he goes to, like, his, like, I guess, mistress or whatever, her friend, essentially. And, like, after, like, killed, you know, the girlfriend, and then tried to kill the father and stuff, and then he's like, says, I did it, and it's like, he says so we could be together, and is it kind of like just him trying to like rationalize it in his mind?
That's how I took it. Why, that he was like, okay, trying to judge. He's like, I just did this horrible thing, and I don't understand it, and I had this out of body experience. Why did I do this? And then he's like talking to her, and like he's so just jumbled and doesn't understand. He's just got memories. He's like, oh, well, I did this. I must have done it for you. And he's just kind of like saying whatever comes to his mind. I think that, and he is so broken that I think that he just doesn't even, he's just kind of saying like, well, I did this. This must be why. I have to justify it in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it isn't until like they try to recalibrate her that he gains a little bit more like the Colin persona. Gains a little bit more like understanding of what's going on, and like I guess like that's when he sees the difference between them and like kind of understands like, oh, there's like a parasite. Yeah, a parasite essentially, like in my mind. And yeah, like I mean the dialogue with I at the end too, like with her husband, it went in a very like zigzaggy way than I thought it was going to be. Like once he started with the metaphor of like, you know, the cat, you know, the worm and all that, I was like, but then you're saying like the wife, I'm getting kind of, I think like just kind of using the wife as like the analogy of like getting the worm just kind of confused me, but I got what he's saying. Just a little like, that's what the dialogue is, definitely like that kind of like Cronenberg dialogue of I'm sure of like very zigzaggy and complex in a way, maybe disjointed a little, but yeah, I'm sure if I think about this movie more, it'll clear up a little bit more in my mind. But that's just how I'm
feeling. Yeah, see, that's why I always try to watch these movies like a few days in advance, especially with like this.
I wouldn't have been able to clear it up unless I talked to you guys anyway. I feel like, yeah, no.
Yeah, because I mean, I have been like thinking about it for like the past couple days since I watched it. Because, yeah, this is one of those movies that really, it itself is like a parasite that kind of gets in your mind and makes you just think about, well, why was she doing this? What was going on here? And I think it has a lot of interesting themes about identity and duality and the self that we present to the world and the self that we actually are. And oh, we have these horrible thoughts, and if, as long as we don't act on them, are we good? And we feel guilt, and who are we really? And I thought all of that was very interesting. It does. I wouldn't call this a horror movie. To me, it doesn't feel like horror. It felt like more of like a thriller or like a suspense film, with some obviously
body dysmorphia.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that. Then I also, my experience with Cronenberg, the senior Cronenberg, David, is I haven't seen a lot of his earlier body horror type stuff. I saw a lot of stuff that he did in the 2000s with Viggo, where he was just like, here's Viggo fighting a Russian guy with his dick out. Like, he did a lot of that in like the 2000s.
I haven't seen his recent stuff. I haven't seen Crimes of the Future, but I didn't know. Didn't he do like a
History of Violence?
History
of Violence, where essentially it has like a very like out of nowhere sex scene as well, on a staircase.
And then Eastern Promises as well, which I like both those movies a lot.
Robert Pattinson didn't he do a movie with
Cosmopolis?
Too?
Yeah,
there you go. I was like. It's like Metropolis, something like that. Yeah,
he did kind of get back to his body horror roots with Crimes of the Future, but he was kind of doing more existential stuff in the. I guess he's always been existential, but just kind of like more grounded stuff in like the 2000s and the 2010s, which is what I'm more familiar with. And there's definitely a lot of existential stuff in here. And you guys both kind of touched on the crazy visuals in here, which I think were the most impressive thing to me, and the way, like, when she first transports into his brain and she's like a wax figure and she's just like fucking melting, and then she like reformulates as him, and the colors in that scene are so intense. There's all a lot of like really interesting colors. I'd love to hear like somebody who is more informed about than I am about like color theory and stuff and how that relates to film, of how what they thought about that. But there is a lot of that really cool visual stuff. I think one of the most interesting parts is when she's kind of getting pulled out and she's just, you're kind of seeing her like ripped away at like, and it's just so visceral. And then he comes back and I was like, damn, I don't know how they did that. If it was like CG or like they used some old school tricks. Cause to my eye, it looked fucking incredible.
It was kind of like her, like he had like half of her face like on him. Kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah. And then
I think it was practical. I think it was very much like a mask that had like in between them, and then like they kind of both pulled away from each other, and then like
honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they did some kind of mix of practical and CG, because that's always what's going to look the best, I think, is if you have something practical and then you just kind of like make it, give it a little extra sheen, make it get rid of any of the creases in it with the CG kind of like overlay. I had to guess probably some kind of combination. But yeah, I thought all that was super interesting. I do like films that, like we're talking about, that have those kind of themes of just that it's set in like mostly a real world. This is set in like, they call it like an alternate 2008 when I was reading about it. But it's set in like the real world, but there's just one thing that's a little different. There's something, there's a little off, like Inception is another one of my favorites, where it's like, okay, yeah, it's the real world, but we just have this technology where we can go into dreams. And this one's like, it's the real world, except we can drill a hole in your brain and stick somebody in there. And conceptually, all that stuff was really cool. I think this movie was the right length. I could only find the uncut version on Hulu, but that was still like an hour 45. So like, I like that this movie did not overstay its welcome all. It was nice and short. It kind of set out what it intended to do. It was maybe a little depressing for me. It was a little it was very, very cynical. Like, this movie is like one of the most cynical movies I've seen in a while. I am more of a fan of just the kind of bittersweet movies, but this one is just like, yeah, everyone is terrible, and at the end of the day, you're just going to be, you got to be an awful person to get what you want, I guess, is what it was saying. I don't know.
Go ahead and finish.
I was going to say, yeah, pretty much everybody except for the girlfriend in it, I really, really despised. But they were all, the actors were all great. Obviously Sean Bean's always good, even though he's got a small part, Jennifer Jason Leigh. And then I was not familiar with either of the leads, Andrea Winsborough or Christopher Abbott. And Christopher Abbott, like, him basically playing two roles of someone who is just talking to himself and having his mind ripped in every other direction, I thought he was absolutely incredible. Like, I am now interested that you mention it, Ariel, to check out Catch 22, because heard that's a really good miniseries. This is it might not have been a movie that I would have watched on my own, because I I know that this is a movie that is, it's kind of one of those movies that it is a cult hit. It's a niche kind of movie. Like, I feel like everybody who's seen this movie that I talk to, they fucking love it, but not that many people have seen it. Like, I look, when you look it up, it's got like really good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got a really high Letterboxd score, but it's much more of a cult hit. It's much more of a, like, an underground, which makes sense for the son of David Cronenberg, because he is all about just like making these weird movies that like three people will see, and they're all fucking like, it'll be their favorite movie and nobody else will see it. So I'm always kind of like interested when I can get more into something that I wouldn't come across on my own.
Yeah, it's definitely a movie I wouldn't have seen if we were on this. I don't really, this isn't really my niche of movie to watch. Like, yeah, like for the senior Cronenberg, like, I think the only one that I might be interested in watching maybe is A History of Violence.
History of Violence is fucking incredible. That's a masterpiece.
Yeah, but because there's just so many moments that, like, those kind of like scenes and stuff like that kind of like take me out of it a bit. And that's just me. That's just I'm not really like drawn into or like think of all those like kind of weird kind of psychedelic scenes. And then going back to, the one like downfall of this movie, I would say, is that I didn't really feel anything for the main, the woman, Tess, is it Tess or?
Voss, I think, or?
Voss, or anything like that. Really, truly, I wish she would have like just died, like, for sure.
It's so funny, because like, when I was on Letterboxd, reading reviews today on my break, and like, yeah, a lot of people actually had the same sentiment where they're like, dude, like there's people who loved it, and then the people who were kind of like bashing on it essentially were saying like, I have no fucking care for any of these characters. I don't know who to root for. Like, I just, everyone, it's just kind of like how Derek said it, it's so cynical and it's so like, well, yeah, everyone's a piece of shit. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah, no, I cared about, like, the people that essentially, like, going back to the parasite kind of thing, I cared, even if they weren't good people, the characters that essentially were preyed upon, like, the woman in the beginning, essentially all the people that they, you know.
Except infected. For Sean Bean, he fucking sucked in this movie, he was such a dick.
No, Sean Bean did, I'm talking about the people that had the
implants in their head. I'm like, hit him again with that fucking fire stick or whatever.
Yeah, no, Sean Bean, no, like, essentially all the characters that were implanted, like, even though, like, yeah, it kind of turned out that Yasarin's, Colin's character was, like, a cheater and stuff like that, and I was really hoping that he wasn't. I was like, but still, like, I kind of have, like, I feel bad for him in the end, more so than Voss, for sure, and her bosses. Also, I feel bad for, yeah, her family and her husband, especially since he's, like, essentially, I can only imagine, like, he's essentially, like, trying to figure out why she pulled away from him and, like, their marriage and all that. And there's people in this movie that I sympathize for, but the main Voss, they did not give me anything to grasp on her to sympathize with, and I think
that's the point, though, you know.
Yeah, but really, truly, like, Alan was saying, I did not really care what.
Oh, I knew you were gonna hate this movie, Ariel. Like, I mean, I was the same way, where I was like, I was kind of feeling the same way.
Well, I wouldn't say like hate. It's just like a movie that. I see like shortcomings in, but I know that some people, you know, wouldn't say that as shortcomings. They'll just see it as like a, you know, artistic, whatever. But
I do really want to hear what Alan had to think about it, because this is your pick, Alan. Like, you, I know that you're gonna. I want to hear why. Yeah, what made you be like, you know, this is the movie we're gonna. I'm not trying to like knock it or anything, but like, you're the guy here.
Essentially, well, one of my favorite reviews I saw on Letterboxd, what I even liked it was, I'm a huge slut, paraphrasing, I'm a huge slut for extreme gore and synthesizer soundtracks. And I was
I saw that same comment. Yeah. I liked it too.
Yeah, I was like, that's exactly what I like, and that's exactly what I was looking for. I just dig these movies. Like, it is a niche genre, like you guys were saying, and I kind of like the cynical, almost like nihilistic kind of endings. Like, this ending was fucking sad. Mm. I was watching it in the morning, like a couple months ago when I first saw it, and my girlfriend woke up, and she was like, dude, what the fuck? It's like 10 a.m. Why are you watching this? Like, it's so sad. Like, she woke up right when, like, her husband and son died, and I was like, fuck, you missed the dick. You missed the scene where she had a dick. That shit was wild. But I just love this shit, man. Like, I love, like, I know how you guys were saying, or Ariel was saying that, like, those scenes, the psychedelic scenes kind of take you out. For me, it, like, draws me in, and I love that feeling. I love colors. Like I love wacky, strong colors all over the place. Like Beyond the Black Rainbow, or Suspiria is a big one. Mandy. Oh, she's also in Mandy, too. The main actress. Yeah, she's in it, too. She's one of the main characters. And that movie is so colorful, synthesizer heavy. Like, that's just what I love. And I guess that's, like, my niche.
So yeah, I got a movie for you, Alan. Yeah. It's called Annihilation.
I have seen it, and it's pretty great. I've read the book, too.
Yeah, I like color. I think it's just the body dysmorphia just gets me.
It's the body horror? The body horror is also, like...
It's not the body horror. Yeah, body horror, I guess. But, like, I like vibrant colors. I think I haven't watched Mandy, but I think I like Mandy just because story-wise. But, yeah, it's very much like the... Like, what kind of things like that?
I love that shit.
A little, like colors, though. Yeah.
I think what kind of got me into that was, like, growing up, I think one film that really fucked with me that made me kind of, like, I don't know if some listeners now it's, the internet's a lot better, but, you know, quote unquote, but back then you kind of just ran into a lot of shit. And you're like, oh, what the fuck is that? And you discover things and you just go, holy shit. And it's kind of like, you know, you're not supposed to look at that shit. And I'm not saying anything, like, it's just horrible shit back when the internet was the wild west. And then, you know, people are like, you should check this out. And you go, okay, I guess. And you see it and you go, oh my God, that's fucked up. Or it's trippy, it's wild. And then End of Evangelion, the film for the ending of Neon Genesis Evangelion, that film is just, it's one of those things where you kind of want to hide and you don't want to look. And I guess that's something triggered in me very young, where I was like, I don't want to look, but I have to, like, I still have to watch it. And, like, it's like this weird masochistic, I guess, is it sadomasochistic?
Mm.
When it's to yourself. Like, I kind of like to torture myself with weird visuals like that, even though I love seeing it. It's like this weird, like, it's like a drug where I'm like, I have to see it. And it just, like, mm-hmm. it pulls me in, and it's a trip. And that's always been something that pulls me in. So,
yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Sorry. My bad. Go ahead.
I think, like, my threshold. Like, going to, like, your Evangelion kind of thing, I think my threshold would be, like, the level that's shown in, like, Akira, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of level. I think that's what, and I'm sure that's, like, what Evangelion might have been as well, a little bit, because
of that one. Just, if you guys thought this movie was cynical, that End of Evangelion just takes it, like, past 11. Like, it just doesn't, it just wants you to fuck it. Because I saw that when I was like 12, like, our old co-host Fred showed it to me, we watched it together, and as a 12-year-old I was like, this is fucked up. I was like, this is sad. And I was just like, I remember that film stayed with me for like months, and I kind of got out over it, and I was like, I need more. I was like, it was like I took a bad hit of something, and I just kind of fell into it. But
Yeah, like, I'm okay with the cynical ending and stuff. That's why I was like, the contrast. I like the contrast between, you know, the two, the beginning and the end. like, cynical endings aren't my favorite, but I'm okay with them. Like, if it's, like, told in a way and like that I could appreciate. I did appreciate that. Just the kind of cynical, like, yeah, she's, like, all in kind of thing and stuff like that. But, yeah.
Well Ariel, it's reminded me a lot of, like, what you and I were talking about on when we were talking about on You've Never Seen. And you had me watch Summer Stock, and I was like, mm-hmm. I can appreciate this movie, right? I can appreciate how well-made it is and stuff like that and all the performances, but this is not my kind of movie. This 50s-style, very big bravado musical is not my kind of thing. And I also brought up, I was like, there's some movies that Alan might suggest that would not be my thing necessarily either, but I can still appreciate them. I can still mm-hmm. appreciate, like I said, all the effects in this, all the, you know, the great acting, all the stuff, like the... all these things that it's saying, and all these all the messages about not feeling like you're at home in your own body, and what that might mean for, you know, like, is it trying to say something like as a trans metaphor, or just like people just in general not fitting in? I appreciate all those things, but like, I didn't have a good time watching it, you know. So
that's the best. That's what I love. It's like you're going into a haunted house at like Universal Studios, and you're just like, I kind of want to fucking leave. Like, now you're like getting uncomfortable. I like sitting in that, but mm-hmm. funny enough, I like sitting in that, but with comedy films, like a lot of like,
I
sit there and I'm like, oh no, I don't
want to be comedy. Here. I fucking hate cringe.
I can't deal with
it.
Alan, have you ever watched Don't Help Me, I'm Scared?
Wait,
there are these fucking YouTube videos.
Oh, those? Okay, those?
They made an actual show out of it. And it's those are, like, the most, like, body horror, like, comedy, but they're, like, puppets, and it's, like, so... it's, like, cringe comedy and body horror all at once, so it's all the shit we're talking about.
I didn't feel it was too cringe comedy. It was more uncomfortable. Like, yeah. I haven't seen the show, but every time they dropped a new episode, because they would do it like every year, they would do one video, mm-hmm. and I had to watch it because I was like, oh my god, this shit is so fucking weird.
Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared just dropped.
Legit, absolutely.
I think also like the rehearsal is like,
I fucking love the rehearsal. I do fucking love the rehearsal. The rehearsal is brilliant.
Is it kind of like along the same lines though?
No, I think the rehearsal is pretty different. The rehearsal is, it's kind of cringe, but it's existential in the same way, but it's a lot more like inward and like hopeful, and you know, same thing with
host of the
I was gonna say it's Nathan Fielder, who's the same guy who did Nathan for You, which I'm also a really big fan of. All of Nathan Fielder's stuff I think is brilliant, but I wouldn't really compare it to this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think like, Alan, you know, you're okay watching it and stuff like that overall. Derek, you're like, I hate it. I didn't like
how I didn't I hate felt. It, you know.
I mean, you're like, I didn't like how I felt while I watched it. And then for me, mm-hmm. I think I'm just like too confused kind of thing. Like, you're saying about like, oh, you know, you could appreciate it. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm like very much like, I don't know. Like, there's elements where I'm like, because like, yeah, the calling, the guy that played Colin, and I was like, I like him as an actor. I liked how his performance felt, you know, that's really probably why I like felt bad for him for the most part. I think that if we saw a little bit more Voss at the beginning, like going back to that, she the things that she was in, liked her in, but I think like we weren't given enough time with her as a character, like alone, which I guess is the point. Maybe
that's I don't need any more time with her. Fuck, she sucks.
Yeah,
but yeah, it reminds me of something that we were talking about a couple podcasts ago when we had Alex Kairos on from Beyond the Screenplay, and we were talking about The New World, and we were kind of talking about like, oh, when you see a movie and you're not sure if you like it right away, and you're like, I gotta think about this, and I had that experience with The New World, and I was like, you know what, I did like this. And then with this one, I was like, you know what, I didn't really enjoy watching it, but maybe if I think about it a little more, I will like the movie. And I did say on that time, on that podcast, usually I end up like coming around and liking the movie. Didn't work out here, I will say, but I do appreciate that this movie had that effect on me, where I was like, you know what, I really gotta think about this. I really gotta like stew in these feelings of uncomfortability that this movie has given me, and regardless of where I landed, I do appreciate that in a movie, that it is having an effect on me after that. I can't just, like, you know, after I finish watching it, I'm like, that was fine, and I turn it off. I'd much rather have an experience where I was like, that was uncomfortable, why did it make me uncomfortable, what is it saying, than something where it's just like, it's fine, it's over, whatever.
Yeah, and you know what, I appreciate that more, because even I go through that too, where I watch a movie and I go, oh, well, let me sit on it, because there's films, obviously, that you watch, and you're immediately, you're like, I fucking hate everything about this. Like, you're watching 10 minutes in, and you're like, no, I don't want it. Like, you know, for me, 40-Year-Old Virgin, fucking all those Judd Apatow movies, I watch them and I'm like, I fucking hate this. And I don't appreciate anything about it. But, like, with Requiem for a Dream, which is, like, a good movie, fucking, that movie is just, like, it sticks with you, and it's, you appreciate it for what it is.
I'm still iffy about watching it myself.
Like, I always tell people, I'm like, it's a great movie, I'll never fucking watch it again. It just...
That's great with the Fireflies for me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're just like, nah, you know what, it was great. I hear that a lot about Grave with Fireflies. And it's like... Like, that movie is just so heavy. Like, I took a shower when I finished it. Like, and I remember some buddies were like, you want to go drinking? And I was like, not really. Like, I just, I kind of want to... I want to go to bed. Like, it just... Ugh. But you appreciate it after it. And I'm like, I appreciate the experience I went through. And I'm like, and that's cool. Like, I think it's completely okay to be like, I didn't like it, but I appreciated the experience that it gave me. Because, it's very powerful that a film or a TV show can give you that feeling. That can make you feel uncomfortable or happy or sad, whatever. I think that's really powerful. So when I hear you guys say that, it makes me laugh, because I'm like, I was hoping you guys would feel these weird things, like, of like, oh, what the fuck, and da 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 da. So with that, I'm happy. But, like, yeah. But they are shitty movies, of course. Like, you're like, fuck this, I don't want to watch it.
And I will say, it's the right length for a movie like that. Like, absolutely. It's not something like where I had to watch like a fucking like 18 episode miniseries that it's just like, why am I still watching this? This is making me so... It's like an hour 45. Watch it. And I was like, okay, cool. I don't have to live in this world any longer. I can think about it maybe a little bit, but I'm not like... I'm invested at this point. I have to keep going. So it was the right amount of... there's a nice short movie for what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, perfect. For me, it was perfect length. I was like, cool. I'm done. And that was it. It was great. But yeah, any final thoughts on the film or any other films that you guys feel like kind of got you in that similar feeling that you enjoyed, though, that you're like, okay, this was cool. And it could be happy or sad or exciting, whatever. I mean, it's kind of easy to say happy because we get all these great blockbusters every year. So you're pretty happy to go watch, you know, Black Panther or you know, Batman, whatever.
The first one that comes to mind, it's one that I actually just saw. And I walked out of it, and I was like, I don't know if I really dug it. And it's the new Martin McDonagh movie, The Banshees of Inisherin, which, you know, I've talked about before on this podcast how I'm a really big fan of Martin McDonagh. We covered stuff in Psychopaths. So I love all of his films. And I watched it, and I was like, that was good. But I don't know how I felt about it after. And then, like, after, like, a couple days, I was like, this might be my favorite movie of the year. Like, it's at least in, like, my top three. The more I'm just thinking about it, I'm like, man, it was so powerful and... You know, I won't spoil anything, but it's really just a great movie. I think it's out right now in theaters. It's probably going to be a big Oscar contender, and it's one that I had to sit with a lot, and it did give me a lot of complex emotions, but in the end, I came away being like, I did really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I can't really think of ones that, like, off the top of my head of kind of, like, that I sat with and said, like, came up with, like, oh, no, yeah, I did like it. But the one that, like, because I thought you were going to say, like, oh, the one that made you feel cringy also. And I'm like,
cringy,
oh, yeah.
If it made you feel cringy, yeah.
Was Uncut Gems. Like, I literally had to walk out, like, halfway through. And because I was just like, I can't. Like, I this is just too much. Like, and yeah. And that's a movie, like, I will only watch once. Like, I do not want to watch that movie again, ever again. Just because, like, it is a good movie and stuff like that, but it's just so it just like makes me feel all like tight and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, it's like Anxiety the movie, that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see it. You guys mentioned that, and then someone else the other day told me that they're like, oh, it's my favorite movie, but they're like, I have to sit, you know, like I have to watch it in parts because it's just too anxiety ridden. And I was like, oh shit, okay. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, all of the good amount of the Safdie brothers movies are like that. Like, mm-hmm. I've just seen parts of Good Time, but Good Time is like essentially the same kind of thing of like self-destruction. The movie essentially is both. That's what the Safdie brothers do, or is self-destruction.
I guess the movie that kind of made me think like that, like you, Derek, was actually the same movie that came out. This year was Nope. I walked out of it the first time, and I was like, I don't know if I like that. And then kind of let it sit with me. And then when we went to go watch it together, when I think I saw it the second time with you guys, I was like, oh yeah, best movie, favorite movie of the year. I immediately was like, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love how it stuck with me, and like, it kind of made me creeped out, and I just kept like, I don't know, I always felt like something was watching me, and like, it was great. Like, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That was a positive one, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh, well, I'm glad to hear you guys talk about the film. But yeah, would you guys want to recommend it to anybody at all?
If you are a Cronenberg fan and of that feel and status of the movie, genre. then yeah, like, go for it. If you aren't, then you know that, then yeah. It's
yeah, I can't recommend it to like a general wide audience, but if you're somebody who's like, hey, I like these cult underground horror, like anxiety ridden films, you know, I think you'll enjoy it. So people are pretty good at self selecting with this kind of cult movie, I feel like. So to a certain crowd, I think, you know, if you like the psychodrama kind of shit like that, then sure, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right, and now our shameless plugs. Go ahead, guys.
I have another podcast called You've Never Seen ! Where either I or my guests talk about a movie that they've never seen but is considered a part of pop culture and cinematic history. So please check that out. Comes out the first of every month. We will be having a December one with Alan on A Muppet Christmas Carol. So yeah, go and check that one out.
But yeah, we also do a couple other shows. I'm right now, as Ariel alluded to earlier, in the middle of doing my season 2 of my Gateway Episodes podcast, where someone introduces me or I introduce someone else to a TV show, and we are looking at specifically miniseries here, and we'll do that by looking at one episode of the miniseries. So go ahead and listen to it right now. We've got episodes every Wednesday, and that is going till about the end of the year, so you can check that out. I've also got my podcast on the MCU, Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones. Definitely go check that out. We just did an episode on Black Panther with Perry Constantine from the Superhero Cinephiles podcast, Black Panther Wakanda Forever, I should say. And that was a lot of fun. And yeah, that about does it for us. Check us out on all the social media apps, you know, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. You can email us at undercastcompany@gmail.com. And if you guys can give us a review, give us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple or however you're listening to us, it really, really helps the show get noticed, or just tell somebody about the show. And if you want to go the extra mile, we have a Patreon starting as low as $1 a month, where you can get access to our bonus podcast, the Undercast Film Club. So we're doing some cool stuff with that. We're going to be doing a end of the year best of episode. And then we are also coming up for this podcast on our 100th episode pretty soon. We've only got 2 episodes left. We're going to be talking about Stardust, and we're going to be doing a watch-along for Stardust on our Discord. So check out our Discord for any more info on that. But yeah, thank you guys all for listening.
Bye, thanks for being amazing.
Thank you, everybody, and take it easy.